How does a 16-year-old write a song like Lush Life, except by the grace of God? I don't, it's like Mozart or Bach. It's just because life needed it to happen and he was available, I guess. And that is true for all of us, even if we may not have some monument of culture inside of us. Everything matters. All gifts and acts of love are maximal. Everything is important. It's all life seeking to express by means of our individual lives. And if we are willing and available for the expression of life through us, then we will experience generally what we call prosperity, an abundance of all things that we need to do that work. Some of us are intimidated by life. Some of us are afraid of talent, are shy about taking an individual path. And we begin a life of putting our ambition, our most noble desires, on hold. And that can be through a variety of strategies, all of them life diminishing, some of them more costly than others. If one is blessed, and by definition, all of us are, for those of us that are here today, we are all blessed because we have an awareness and we have an opportunity to correct those things that might not be working in an optimal way. For the last several weeks, we've been talking about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous as a spiritual program that everybody can take advantage of to their betterment, for healing an actual action plan, for healing any part of our lives that might not be working, where we might not be experiencing the fullness of life, or as we say, abundance. And we've looked at the first 7 steps, and I want to talk about steps 8, 9, and 10 today as a unit. They're really quite simple. Step 8 is about becoming willing and making an actual list of those we have harmed by our unskilled behavior. Unskilled is a nice way to say really messy behavior. Became willing to look at those things, those ways, those incidents. Some of them are life-changing things, and some of them are kind of quotidien. They're everyday little things where you're thoughtless and rude, or you've got a tone of voice, but are unwilling to say, "I'm sorry," because we have to maintain our facade. We have to maintain our power. There's a wonderful story of Carl Jung and Freud. And this is a true story, where at one point in their collaborative work, where they had been helping each other analyze their dreams, Jung, the younger man, says to Freud, the mentor, "Tell me your dreams." And he said, "I no longer feel it's appropriate for me to tell you my dreams because it will be sacrificing my authority over you." Literally in those words. Well, you know, we rarely have anybody on the record that will actually say something that they mean, especially when it's revealing a weakness. But that is a very standard human condition. We want to always feel that we've got our game face on and nobody's going to see our weakness and I've got to stay in power. It's a losing game. We become willing to really look at all those ways, mostly by commission, not by omission. But things that we really did that were really tacky, that we really should have done better. And to make that list and to actually become willing is a step towards recognizing your wholeness and reclaiming your inherent power, authority, and confidence in itself. And the next step is to do so as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else, to actually go about the business of what is called making amends, or if you want, making restitution. Some of that is a simple, I'm sorry. Some of it is returning something to someone. Some of it is making good on a debt that you've had for maybe, 40 years. And finally saying, you know what? I said I was going to borrow that money, not keep it. When you lent me that money 40 years ago, it saved me, and I've been ignoring that. And you know, here's the deal. We remember those things. Why? Because they're gnawing at us decade after decade. And the price we pay is an erosion in confidence. We are giving away our power when we don't handle our business. Everything that we want to do, and this is a spiritual program, it is a spiritual work, because it is all about reclaiming your true identity, in old school language, that you are a child of God. You are not a fraidy cat, but you are a child of the living God. Handle your business, I says to myself. This is grown-up work. Sometimes you can do it by writing a letter. Those are the easy ones. And in step 9, it says that we want to make these amends to people unless it would cause harm to them. Well, what does that mean? Well, that might mean something like calling someone's house, and if a woman answers, say, hey, you know, I'm really sorry that I had that affair with your husband 4 years ago. You don't need to go there. You don't need to do that. You know what those instances are. Thank God I have 2 regrets in my life. Only 2. And one is, at a certain age, when I didn't know better, I was cruel to my earliest childhood friend. And that still doesn't feel good. And it was 50 years ago. And at one point, as I was working my recovery, I wrote him a letter, very sincere, long letter, and saying, I really was sorry that I was cruel. Basically by saying, I don't want to be your friend anymore. But I didn't know how to do it at the age of 11 or 12. I didn't know how to do it skillfully. I didn't understand the changes I was going through. And so I acted out in a high-handed way that I had learned at home, which is simply to smack down somebody. I did write him a long letter. It was returned that he had passed. He was deceased. But I'd done my work, and there really isn't any more that I can do about it. And I expect that there is a communication between souls, and I am sorry about that. And I feel grateful that I have very few regrets of that nature. But handle your business. Take a look at things where you might have injured or taken advantage of somebody. Become willing to make amends. And as long as it serves your health and wholeness and their health and wholeness and doesn't diminish anybody else's experience, make those amends. It's not just about alleviating guilt. It's about doing the right thing and getting rid of something that is toxic in our spiritual body. The next step is to, on a daily basis, be aware of when we make errors and promptly admit it. Promptly admit it. that means what? I mean, we do this all the time. Again, kind of smacking somebody down because you can, or you think that you have more status. Like, you know, one of my spiritual practices really and truly is staying cool in public environments like the dry cleaner, like the post office. And there's nothing sadder or that makes you cringe more when somebody really beats up like a cashier at a grocery store. They can't do anything about anything, but it's like when the Wicked Witch of the West looks at Dorothy and the Tin Man and she realizes that she's not going to be able to beat up any of those, but she looks at Toto and she says, I'm going to get you. You don't really want to get involved in a fight, but you want to kick somebody that can't kick back. Well, abuse of power, dear friends, is the root of all evil. Abuse of power is the root of all evil. I heard that recently. I wish to God I know who said it. I heard it on the radio. But I know that that is the truth, and that is the truth in every single relationship that we have. It's truth in our own hearts, and it's true for the whole planet in every single situation. And if we find that we personally have abused our power in the office, in our relationship at home, anywhere, by behaving badly, then the practice, the spiritual practice, is to be aware enough so by the close of the day, you will say, oof, that was not good. What was I thinking? You will at least admit it to yourself. At least. Two other things to become aware of. And I'm sorry, I'm drawing a blank on the exact vocabulary. Does anybody know the exact vocabulary for step 10? It's not when we make it promptly, it ends with promptly admitted it, but on a daily basis, be aware of, anybody know it? I'm not outing you. Okay. Where these tricky things happen most often in life is in regard to expectations. In 12-step work, it is said that expectations are resentments waiting to happen. I can go through a lifetime with expectations, not of myself, but of other people and of the world. And when those expectations aren't realized, and they're not going to be because I don't have the consciousness of a healthy demonstration, but when those expectations are not realized, then that becomes our excuse, our whole lifelong excuse. Well, it was supposed to be easy. My parents were supposed to do this. It was supposed to unfold this way, and I got cheated. The other person in the office got the job that I was supposed to have. Well, arguably not. They did whatever they needed to do to get the job, and you didn't. What does it mean when we have that expectation that I was supposed to have? The world wasn't supposed to change as much as it has. Technology is too complicated for me. I'm not going to be bothered. Well, where does that put us? Isolated and bitter. We don't even become aware of the expectations or the entitlements that we think we have, until sometimes we find ourselves already painted into a corner. Expectations, very, very important thing to be aware of. These expectations that we have, why it trips us up so easily and so often, is because they're expectations that we are projecting out on the world. There's only one kind of expectation that's good to have. And that is expecting the best of ourselves. Expecting at the very least that we will tell ourselves the truth. And we will be content with that. Rather than blaming or having an expectation or a resentment about somebody else. These are so fundamental and foundational to a healthy spiritual life. What artists of every kind know, artists, small business people who are self-reliant, self-generative, self-manifesting, are that indeed this is my life and this is my work. We got born here. I guess we get the gift of life for free, but everything else is earned. Everything is earned. And if we have a healthy spirituality, which is about understanding the way the world unfolds, the way life really works, and who we are in it, to be wholly self-reliant, as Ralph Waldo Emerson wrote, and it is not, you know, that essay has been co-opted by the American scene. It is not about being self-reliant and, by God, I'm going to make $1 million and do this. It's about being reliant on the God that is you, your greater self, your higher power, that of you that is God. To be self-reliant is the powerful, spiritual, confident, creative way to be in this world. And that's what's required of each one of us. And once we learn that, we unlearn the ways of the world, as Emerson said as well. We spend the rest of our lives withdrawing our projections and our expectations, withdrawing them. I mean, imagine my surprise. I'm a nice guy, nice enough. I just thought automatically you made more money every single year. I thought it just happened. You got your first job, and then, you know, you just made more money every year. That's what being a grown-up was. You know, about when I was 32, I realized that's not happening. That's not the way it actually works. I mean, these are assumptions that we have that are so basic that we don't even realize that they're choices that we made. They're things that we made up at some point. If it's true that the unexamined life is not worth living, then examine your life. Take a look at what's going on in your world. See who you are in it. What part of your life is doing really well? I bet you a nickel, the part of your life that's doing really well is the part that you assume full responsibility for. Look at the part of your life that's not doing so hot. I bet you a nickel, it's because you're waiting for them to meet you halfway. Ha ha ha. This is simple, yes. It's most demanding. But it's so worth it. I know that you know it's worth it. I know that you know that you're worth it. And that there are things that you are wanting to do, that you're waiting to do, and expressions that are needing to happen only by means of you. There's only enough space for them to come through us individually when we do handle our spiritual, emotional business, when we clean up, what is ours to clean up, we will find ourselves astonishingly free. And we will find that living in the moment gives us all the ideas we need, all the power we need, and we become aware that we have all the resources we need to do whatever it is we want to do next. This is a great spiritual path that we are on. There are many tools that we have. This program, this 12-step program, is one of many tools. But whatever you do, find one and please work it. God bless you, friends. I really appreciate you.